Of course we want to beat Trump. But if all we do is win federal elections, if most of their damage and most of their agenda is being done through state houses, we can win our federal battle and still lose the broader battle for democracy. We have to go deeper and broader. If most of their agenda is being rushed through gerrymandered state houses and states across this country, we have to go there as well and start to compete, contest, hold extremists accountable. That's what a long-term victory for democracy looks like.
And welcome to the Politics Girl podcast. I'm your host, Lee McGowan. Let's get into it. Well, we know who the candidates are now, and the stakes could not be higher. As we keep saying on this show, the 2024 election isn't a battle between two candidates or two parties. It's a battle between two Americas, one with democracy and one without. And there's no sugarcoating this. Donald Trump has told the Republicans he has no room in the party for moderates. There is no room for Mitt Romney's or John McCain's. There is no room for anyone who wants to work within the system. There is only room for MAGA, only room for extremism in policy and deference in leadership. Project 2025 lays it all out with its Christian nationalism and loyalty tests and the abandonment of the checks and balances that make America, America. So it is absolutely essential that we understand what we're up against and we play to win at every single level. To talk about this, I am joined by writer, democracy activist, and former chair of the Ohio Democratic Party, David Pepper. David, who teaches election and voting rights law at the University of Cincinnati College of Law, is a regular on MSNBC, CNN, C-SPAN, newspapers, podcasts, and radio shows across the country. He is the author of Laboratories of Autocracy, which was called arguably the most important book about the erosion of democracy in America, and Saving Democracy, which drops in May. A graduate of Yale and Yale Law School, David was a clerk in the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals, is a senior fellow at the Kettering Foundation, and is a very well-known novelist of political thrillers. He is also all over your social media feed, doing whiteboard breakdowns of complicated political information like your smartest, most engaging professor. I'm having him on today to talk about how we take this very important moment in history and turn it into something good. How we turn an attack on our democracy into a way to strengthen it. So without further ado, please welcome my guest, author, activist, and democracy's favorite professor, David Pepper. Welcome, David.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be together today.
I know. So am I. I was just saying we're simpatico, right? We're both on social media. We're both trying to break down these complicated issues so we can re-engage people in democracy. And as I was saying in the intro, you're just doing it like the most engaging professor, and I'm doing it like your most political friend.
Exactly. No, I've loved watching you start and then explode and everyone learning from you all the time. It's been great to watch.
But isn't it hopeful that there's that many people that really want to know more and they want to do more and they want to do better?
Absolutely.
I just think it's amazing. As you were just saying in one of your most recent whiteboards, which if people are not watching David on social media, you really should because he's doing these great whiteboards, is that the battle for America is often described as being between red and blue. But that's a mistake because it's actually way bigger than that. And we have to understand what's really happening in the country if we're going to fight back correctly. So
Absolutely.
Do you want to talk me through that a little bit?
Sure. And I know you're writing your book now as well. What's interesting is when you write, you think. And it's something I wouldn't have probably said before I wrote these books. But the more I wrote them, the more I thought about it, that we have been, and I don't point fingers when I do these whiteboards. I'm talking about things I was doing wrong too. We have been fighting the battle of American politics as Democrats, but also broader pro-democracy people. I'll throw independents, maybe even some Republicans in there. We have been thinking about the battle in a very narrow way as a battle for federal office. And if we win that battle like we did in 08 when Obama won, we win the Senate like we did in 20 with Biden won, we win Georgia, we are celebrating like we've won the whole thing.
Yeah.
And the problem is when we've done that, we've assumed that that's their battle as well. But their battle is actually very different than ours because their battle, actually, they know a couple things that we haven't really been paying attention to. One, they know, unlike us, we've taken democracy for granted for a long time. We've just assumed it's there to stay. They don't assume that. They're studying Viktor Orban because they know it can be undermined. If you hit certain institutions a certain way, it will be undermined. So that's part of their battle. The second part of their battle that's very different from ours is they know that most of their views in politics are actually unpopular. Mitch McConnell told Lindsey Graham, no abortion ban here, because Mitch McConnell didn't want to lose. He told Rick Scott, don't bring your Social Security plan to the Senate. He didn't want to lose. They know that their views are generally unpopular. So unlike us, their battle isn't to go run for federal office saying what they're for. We're sort of living within the rules of democracy trying to win elections. Their battle's against democracy itself. How can you subvert democracy enough to lock in views it would otherwise lose in fair elections? That's their battle. That's what Orban's about. That's what the issue won in Ohio last August was about, right? How do you change the rules so you can win in a state even though most of the state is pro-choice, for example?
And just so everyone remembers what David's talking about, the election that was in, it was a special election. We talked about it all the time. It was in Ohio. And the Ohio Republicans were, knowing that abortion was going to be on the ballot in 22, they went ahead in August and had a special election against their own rules, by the way, that said there would be no summer special elections, to say, actually, we're going to raise the ability to change the Constitution to a supermajority, to 60%. And they tried to sneak it through so that when the majority of people in the state said they wanted to keep abortion rights, they would say, oh, too bad, you need 60% yeah. now. And they lost because people were paying attention.
People figured it out.
They were doing the same thing in Wisconsin, which we talked about all the time, where they think they're sneaking it in. They're saying, we're just going to get the Supreme Court on our side, just like they did in North Carolina. And then all of a sudden we can pass all these laws that no one in the state wants, but there's nothing we can do about it. But people were paying attention and they said, no, we don't want that. And they voted for someone who was not a far right conservative to be on that Supreme Court. And now they're going to get fair, non-gerrymandered maps. So it really does make a difference. But what David's talking about is so essential because one side is out here fighting like democracy is intact, and they're fighting for mainstream views that everyone mostly agrees on, like a return to abortion rights or what you call middle-class economics, public education, common sense gun reform, dealing with climate change, acknowledging climate change. These are mainstream values, and most people would agree with them if you ask them on paper. Right. But we think we can win those, winning elections, and especially winning federal elections. Like you said, correct. We're all celebrating when we win the Senate and the House and the presidency, but we've forgotten that there's another whole battle going on. And one battle is that you need to win at a different level of government as well. And the second battle is the other team is not actually playing in the democracy rules because, as you said, they understand that their viewpoint, their way of looking at the world, this women back in the kitchen thing, this like a full abortion rights, this Christian zealotry, it is not mainstream. It is not popular. Most people hate it. They loathe
it. It's toxic.
It's toxic. That's a great word for it.
And the smart ones know it's toxic. Mitch McConnell knows it's toxic. And that ends up shaping, you know, how do you lock in a minority worldview over time in America? You control states. You win them, you gerrymander them, you suppress as much of the majority vote coalitions you can. And then what do you do? What we're seeing all over the country. Then you can ram your extremist agenda through and no one can stop you. So even though Texas is pro-choice, Ohio, Missouri, Kansas, well, Mitch McConnell says, don't you dare bring a national abortion ban here. We don't want to have Mehmet Oz lose, which he did when he explained his abortion position. They didn't want to have that battle at the Senate. They can ram it through gerrymandered state houses all they want. And that's why what I say in a lot of what I talk about is, of course we want to beat Trump. But if all we do is win federal elections, if most of their damage and most of their agenda is being done through state houses, we can win our federal battle and still lose the broader battle for democracy. We have to go deeper and broader. If most of their agenda is being rushed through gerrymandered state houses and states across this country, we have to go there as well and start to compete, contest, hold extremists accountable. That's what a long-term victory for democracy looks like beyond winning five or six swing states every couple of years. We've been celebrating as if we've been winning. And then a few months later, it looks like we're not winning. That's because their battle is so different. We have to finally see what it is and fight it where they're fighting it and see that it is democracy that's on the line. And you have to fight that battle on multiple levels all over the country.
Well, you pointed out right. You say that the other side understands that democracy isn't intact and it's unstable. And they have been using that knowledge for years while we have been playing by the old rules. They understand that we're not playing on an even playing field. And if you can get a certain amount of state legislatures, it doesn't matter if the perspective of the state changes. Doesn't matter if the demographics of the state changes. Texas is a perfect example of that. The growth in that state has been primarily minority, primarily cities, primarily people of color. And yet their state houses still look like everyone in that state is white and rural. And that is done deliberately to hold back new voices. And they understand that. They've had that knowledge for years. They have kicked it into high gear after Obama, and then they supersized it with Trump. And now they're around the country passing voter suppression laws like crazy, fundamentally based on the big lie, which they know not to be true. It's very calculated. They know that democracy no longer works for them, so they are no longer working with democracy. It's pulling out all of these stops to tilt the playing field just enough, like you said, to then get it so you can gerrymander districts and get the Supreme Court, because it's a winning strategy for them. And it doesn't matter that they don't have the majority sentiment if the minority can continue to win. It's winning without winning, and it's been very successful for them.
Yeah. No, I mean, they know they're in the minority, and that shapes all of it. When we see Tucker Carlson go to Hungary to study Orban, then CPAC invites him here. They're showing us what they're studying, which is the person who, again, they're not trying to just, they don't want to leave the impression democracy's gone. They want to subvert it enough so that the minority views still win. But we still have elections. That's what Orban has perfected. So yeah, everything is driven from their understanding that they would lose if they ran around and said, here's what we're for, vote for or against us. That happened in Kansas. They lost 60-40 in August of 22. That happened in Ohio. They lost 57-43 in November of 23. When they have a straight up vote on almost every aspect of their agenda, they will lose. They know it. So they have a very different battle. And we just need to see it. I don't think we've always taken democracy for granted, but there's been sort of a post-60s, post-Warren Court, almost a privileged view since that time that democracy's there to stay. John Lewis would tell all of us, are you crazy? You think it just happens automatically? Did you not see what we had to do to get it there? But I think the next generation down, we've grown up where it sort of felt like, hey, we're America. It's just here to stay. And so, yeah, we took our eye off not just democracy, but the fact that democracy is largely shaped in states. They're the ones passing voting laws every year. Every once in a while, it needs to happen more. Congress passed a voting law, but all the time, dozens of times every year, you know, Ohio passes voter suppression, Texas passes voter suppression. Until we go to that place and start contesting there, they can continue to attack democracy from the high ground of gerrymandered state houses. And here's the, again, I'm an optimist like you are. I wouldn't be doing this if I weren't. But in many of these states, and it's starting to change with some great new leaders like Anderson, Clayton, North Carolina. In many of these states, like 50% of the Tennessee Republicans who attacked the two Justins and kicked them out were uncontested November of 22. So often, you know, Mike Johnson, his first race for the state house, the primary was uncontested. The general was uncontested. His next race for the state house, uncontested. Then three congressional blowouts in gerrymandered districts, then uncontested. Then he's Speaker of the House. So we're talking about a group of people who have largely their entire careers not been in a democracy. We don't run against them. So they can be extremists and never worry about it because we're not challenging. So my goal in life is to say, win the federal races, of course, but we have to start getting on the ballot at all levels across these states, not because we're going to win everywhere, but we'll start bringing accountability back into the very places where they're doing most of the damage against not just us, but mainstream America.
Yeah. Compete everywhere. I always use the analogy when you were talking about like post-60s, we kind of were like, democracy is always going to be there, right? I always say democracy and America are like a couple in a long-term marriage. Like if you've been in a long-term marriage, you kind of just assume that person's always like, democracy is always going to be there. Like, I don't really need to pay that much attention to it. And we all know that in a relationship, when you stop paying attention to the person you're in a relationship with, that's when the relationship can splinter. And that's when someone gets a wandering eye. And honestly, the Republicans, if we have neglected democracy, the Republicans have just kicked it out of bed, right? They're like, it's not working for us anymore. Like, get out. And they have a full wandering eye for autocracy. And they think it'll work better for them because that is how minority rules. It's what's happening, in, like you said, in Hungary. It's what happens in Russia. It's what happens in Belarus. It's happening in all these places where they come in and they say, yes, we're a democracy. We have elections, but right. we know who's going to win. And then once we're in right. power, we rig the judiciary and we rig the press and we rig all these things so we continue to win. And we can't pretend that's not exactly what happened in 1930s Germany either. Like, there is so much historical background that really explains this happening before. And the goal for the Republicans right now is not to advocate for their views and let the best idea win, because they know they don't have the best ideas. They don't have the personality. They don't have the policy. They don't have any of it. And like you said, you look at Mike Johnson, he's Speaker of the House, second in line after Kamala Harris to the presidency. And he's never actually run a competitive election in his life. So why would he believe in democracy? He's never had to actually
function within it. He's scared of it. Think about it. If you're in power and you've never once been in a contested race, often never even anyone running, you're scared of democracy. You don't even know what I mean, look, that State of the Union, he looked so uncomfortable. He didn't know when to clap. Well, if you've never, I say this having been, I ran for office every time I had to earn it. So I kind of know what it feels like to be on the line, to be accountable. That's a guy, by the way, and he's not the exception. He's the rule. The entire generation of all at the state and these congressional folks, they've basically been in power all this time. It's their little secret that we all need to figure out, without really being in a democracy, without any accountability. So yeah, they're scared of it. And especially with the smart ones know their extremism is not sustainable in a fair district. So they have to always keep locking down democracy, or they worry sick they're going to lose. But Mike Johnson in a fair district, 50-50, if you ran against him, if I run against him, it'd be the easiest election of all time. He's too extreme. And a lot of these folks, their actual results, when they give all the public school money away, all they can't defend the results either. So they kind of know it, and they're scared of democracy they've actually never been a part of.
Yeah. And we talk about this all the time, that if we were competing everywhere, not just being like, oh, that's a safe red state. It's not. I mean, you know, a lot of these states that are safe red states, people vote at 51%. You're like, there's another 49% of that state that's not even voting. What if it's just because we're not talking to them, you know? And we've had people like the States Project on, who I know you know and you love. And we've talked about how the battle for these state legislatures is so essential, because so many times, even these big federal laws that come down end up being implemented at the state level. Like, we have the Affordable Care Act, and then we have states like Mississippi and Oklahoma refusing to take the federal money to expand the program, right? So then people blame the government because they don't have health insurance, but they're not blaming the right people, because their states are not actually looking out for them. That's how we're seeing abortion play out at different states. You know what I mean? Like, the actual issue itself at the state level is showing us where people's positions really are. People often blame the president when things don't go the way they want, but everything really comes down to these state houses. And you keep pointing out that even the rules of democracy itself go through the state houses. You know, like Absolutely. When people can vote, what votes count, what ID you need, where your drop boxes are, if you have drop boxes, if you can vote by mail, that's all decided at the state level. Even how these districts are drawn, the districts reflect who gets a voice at the federal level. They reflect who gets a voice at the state government. And if certain people or demographics are just drawn out of the effect, then what happens to them? And that's all at the state level. So yes, right. you're entirely right. Of course we need to beat Trump, and of course we need to keep the Senate, and that house better be easy to flip, because God knows they can't do anything.
Right.
But we can't stop there. That's not where you celebrate. You say, great, we're going to take those three places, and we're going to protect voting rights. We're going to protect women's rights. We're going to do all this stuff. But we also have to do it at every level in every state at all times and not stop, because we stop paying attention to the relationship on every level, and we got to dial back in. Did you know that traditional bed sheets can hold on to more bacteria than a toilet seat, which can lead to things like acne, allergies, and stuffy noses? Well, it can, which is why I'm so happy to tell you about Miracle Made. Miracle Made offers a whole line of self-cleaning, antibacterial bedding, like sheets, pillowcases, and comforters, that prevent up to 99.7% of bacterial growth and require 3 times less laundry. Using silver-infused fabrics inspired by NASA, Miracle-Made sheets are able to stay cleaner and fresher 3 times longer than other sheets. Plus, they're just really nice. Incredibly luxurious bedding without that incredible high price. So stop sleeping on bacteria and sleep clean with Miracle. Go see for yourself. Go to trymiracle.com/politicsgirl to try Miracle-Made sheets today. And whether you're buying them for yourself or as a gift, if you order today, you can save over 40%. Plus, if you use our promo code politicsgirl at checkout, you'll get 3 free towels and save an extra 20%. Miracle is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you aren't 100% satisfied, you'll get a full refund. Upgrade your sleep today with Miracle-Made. Go to trymiracle.com/politicsgirl and use the code politicsgirl to claim your free 3-piece towel set and save over 40% off. Again, that is trymiracle.com/politicsgirl to treat yourself. Well, I'm back talking about my darling doggo Chips and his devotion to Sundays for Dogs. Sundays for Dogs is a fresh dog food made from a short list of human-grade ingredients. It was co-founded by a practicing veterinarian who tests and formulates every version of each recipe. Sundays contains 90% meat, 10% superfoods, and 0% synthetic nutrients or artificial ingredients. And unlike other fresh dog food, Sundays doesn't require refrigeration or preparation because of their air-drying process, so you can just pour and serve. Look, my dog is a doll, but he's a picky eater with a sensitive stomach, which is a drag. So getting him food he likes that's also good for him has been a production his whole life. And when I say we've tried everything, we have tried everything. But Sundays for Dogs has been so easy. He likes the beef. He likes the chicken. I love that I change what he eats, and what I picked up on walks didn't change. It's been incredibly impressive. Plus, it's delivered to my home on a reoccurring order, so no more trips to my vet with the terrible, terrible parking. Yet another bonus. So if you want to try this terrific food for your dog, go to sundaysfordogs.com/politicsgirl to get 40% off your first order. That's sundaysfordogs.com/politicsgirl or use the code politicsgirl at checkout for 40% off. Because I'm sure your dog is just as special to you as Chips is to me. And don't these guys deserve the best? sundaysfordogs.com/politicsgirl. The Politics Girl podcast has a new sponsor, Factor. Factor is a fresh, never frozen, chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, ready-to-eat meal in just 2 minutes. 2 minutes. For real. Look, we don't always have time to cook. Even with the best meal prep delivery services, there's still a lot of chopping and cooking and time, but not with Factor. There's no prep, no shopping, no thinking. And they have over 35 different options to choose from every week. They also have a calorie smart plan, a protein plus plan, and a keto plan, and more than 60 add-ons like breakfast, midday bites to keep you fueled and feeling good. They even have booster shots for your health. This isn't your average prepared meal or like the frozen food section at the grocery store. These are restaurant quality dishes that are ready to heat whenever you are ready to eat. We're talking filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, and broccolini. This is no joke. And right now, Factor is celebrating Earth Day all month long with low carbon footprint meals. Just look for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu. I can't tell you how relieved you're going to be to find these meals in your fridge at the end of the day. So head to factormeals.com/politicsgirl50 and use the code politicsgirl50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code politicsgirl50 at factormeals.com/politicsgirl50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your second box while your subscription is still active. Factor Meals. Dietitian approved, lifestyle and taste bud friendly, and as my grandmother would say, delicious, nutritious. So we're coming into wedding season and prom season and dressy dress-up season where you can't get away with thicker fabrics to hide what we want to hide, which is why I'm pleased to be talking about our sponsor, Honeylove. I don't love shapewear. If I'm being honest, I don't actually love bras. But I will say, if you have to wear either, or better yet, a matching set, Honeylove has thought it through. Are you tired of the underwear that cuts into you, bras that cause a bulge in the back, your comfy bra giving you that dreaded uniboob look or looking like a sausage in your shapewear? And yes, men listening to my show, these are things real women deal with. If any of those things resonate with you, then I highly recommend you check out Honeylove. Honeylove's best-selling crossover bra gives all the support of traditional bras without using any underwire. And their more relaxed V-bra is designed to lift and separate with molded cups, making it unlike any other comfy bra. The shapewear matches, and it has pressure where you need pressure and give where you need give, so no flat butts here. It's the most thoughtful shaper I've ever seen. So check it out. Treat yourself to the best bras on the market and save 20% off at honeylove.com/politicsgirl. Use our exclusive link to get 20% off at honeylove.com/politicsgirl. And after you purchase, when they ask you where you heard about them, please support the show and tell them that we sent you. As they say at Honey Love, honey, you deserve this. honeylove.com/politicsgirl. We stopped paying attention to the relationship on every level, and we got to dial back in.
And that ends up being, that ends up hurting us in so many other ways. Sometimes people think I'm saying, or they assume it's also a zero-sum game. They'll say, well, David, we can't do that because we got to win the federal. And I'll say, well, isn't it better for Joe Biden if there's a candidate in every district in Arizona? Would it have been better for Stacey Abrams if there was a candidate in every district of Georgia and we didn't leave 40% of them uncontested? That would mean that someone was knocking on doors in every district. That would mean that we were on message in every district. So the truth is, it's important to win those races. It's important to bring transparency to these broken, corrupt state houses. But it also has the bottom-up lift turnout and communication effect. You know, all around the country, in these places that we don't compete in, the Republicans are all taking credit for Joe Biden's economic policies. We're not even there to say, actually, you had nothing to do with that. You opposed that. That was us. So if we're not even in the conversation because we're not running, then we also don't have the right message. So it's not even zero sum. We're not taking away by having this focus. We're actually lifting. And when you look at some of the states, you know, Beto O'Rourke running these amazing campaigns, having to cover 40% of districts that we weren't running in. Same story in North Carolina, all these places. This strategy that we have to do is lifting the prospects at the top, but also bringing democracy back to all these states. There's a clause in the Constitution that says all states of the Union, the United States shall guarantee to every state in the Union a Republican form of government. It's a guarantee. It's like the disqualification clause. No one ever paid attention to it. But the United States is supposed to guarantee, and we know, don't listen to the Republican take on republic, okay? They meant majority democracy rule, basically. The truth is, many of our states, I would just simply submit, do not fulfill the guarantee that they are Republican forms of government. Kansas doesn't when the state house passes abortion bans that 60% disagree with. All over the country, we have true minority rule, which doesn't reflect that. And we've literally let it become sort of business as usual. And I think we have to start deciding that winning those swing states, while important, is not the real battle. It's fighting for democracy in all 50 states. That's the real battle. And I think the benefit of doing that redounds at the state level, gets these millions of Americans out of living in states literally of non-democracy and extremism doesn't reflect them. But it also boosts us up the line so that we're on message and we're stoking turnout in a way that just doesn't happen when you're leaving, 50% of Tennessee or 60% of Oklahoma just uncontested.
Right. And doesn't it seem like this is a good time to do it? Because it always came down to money, right? Like, we have to run people in swing states. We have to do this. We have to win this federal election. There's only so much money to go around. So we're not going to throw money at the Senate race in South Dakota because it's just not happening. And you're like, Well, at this point, the RNC is quite clearly broke. They're changing leadership right now. Most of the money that they're raising from Republican donors is going to Donald Trump's legal fees. So it seems like if anyone's going to have more money at this point, it would be the Democrats to run more candidates, to not leave a single seat unopposed, and to be out there finding your backbench of young, new people, hungry people. I always say, I wish we could just make politics cool. I want teenagers coming out of high school, like, I want to go into politics because that's where change is made, you know? Right. That's where you can make a difference. That's where you can really do stuff. If we had more people coming into it like that, instead of like, oh, government, who wants to be in that? But we could. That is entirely possible and completely plausible if we look at government differently. If we're not like, It comes down to six states, every 4 years. I always laugh because people talk so much about the presidential election and they miss the midterms. And I think the midterms are what hold everything accountable. The midterms are every single person in the House. If you don't have the House, the president can't do very much.
And almost every state house.
Thank you. Exactly. Right? It's like, Listen, the power of the states is not new. And I want people to remember the Republicans have had a 50-year plan to really turn things around with the Supreme Court and with Roe and with taking over all this stuff. But this is not new. The power of the states has always been, because we're set up with a federalist system, you know, like back in the day, we had the Civil War and we had the 13th Amendment to free the slaves. Then we had the 14th Amendment to give birthright citizenship. And that should have been when all black men got to vote. Through their citizenship, right? But some states just didn't do it. They were like, no thanks, we'll take the hit in Congress on the number of seats we get. So we needed the 15th Amendment to come in and say, you know what? Everyone gets a vote. You can't disqualify someone for formally being enslaved, or if they're the wrong color, every man over 18 gets a vote. So we had to have the 15th Amendment for that. So then the states came up with literacy tests and poll taxes and all these things to make sure democracy still worked for them and the right people were still voting. And then we needed the Voters' Rights Act in the 60s to make even all of that stick, right? And right. Now we have the Supreme Court rolling back those voter rights, right? And rolling back the Voter Rights Act and rubber stamping some of the most egregious voter suppression laws at the state level. And so we need to be really clear that this isn't new. This is not a new tactic. They're using what has been used for forever. And now they have a Supreme Court that's 100% on board for this kind of anti-democratic minority rule situation. So we need to keep that in mind too.
Right. Yeah, I mean, the parallels to what went from Reconstruction to Jim Crow are scary. Both the state-level laws and constitutions and a Supreme Court letting them all basically erase the protections of the Constitution, it is scary, including, you know, not passing federal protections in 1890 in a way that was very similar to the fact that the new voting rights laws got filibustered in 22. So, you know, I do a lot of whiteboards. Some of the most shared whiteboards I do are the ones that point to that history. And by the way, of course, it's no accident. That's the exact history they want to censor because it's so similar to what we're facing today. I want to talk about the money for a second because you're absolutely right. The power on our side is that grassroots small dollars are actually really exploding when we get excited. Amy McGrath, for example, I never fault people kind of roll their eyes like, it's terrible she raised $100 million. No, that's her. She was a candidate. You're supposed to do that. She raised $100 million to run against Mitch McConnell. That shows us, and that was mostly small dollars, that when we get excited, we give. And we give a lot. We gave to Jamie Harrison.
We gave to Tim Ryan. Jamie Harrison and
McGrath. We gave to all of them. Good for us and good for those candidates for raising it. But we need to be strategic. So what I would say is, okay, let's, as a group, give Amy McGrath $75 million. Take $25 million of our excitement for democracy and be strategic enough to say, you know, that would fund like 150 state house candidates in places we normally don't run. So let's actually have a democracy budget mindset as opposed to sort of a celebrity Senate candidate mindset, where of course we want Sherrod Brown to win. But if we were to park some of our grassroots money at a lower level, state houses, for $50,000 or $100,000, you could run a good race in many districts around Kentucky that were uncontested, win some of them, and hold extremists accountable everywhere. So the money is there, but the strategic mindset of how we invest for democracy, we just haven't had that. We basically respond to exciting federal races. That's what we give to. And so and this is why the States Project is so awesome. We need to figure out ways to show people that that level of investing matters and make it easy. And so the States Project is doing that. They're raising millions. I've created something in Ohio. We want to create several places where we create a crowdfunding process. It's called Blue Ohio, the one in Ohio. I've got 1,000 people who are giving a monthly amount, 10 or 15 bucks. All of that money we give to state house candidates running in the very hard districts that never otherwise would get any money. And we are now the third biggest contributor to Democratic candidates for the state house in Ohio. We don't want anything but democracy. And it shows by doing this in only a couple of years, people want to do it. So we have to come up with ways to show, take some of the excitement that we put into certain races and just, again, don't zero out these federal races. We got to win them. But take some of it that would have been sort of a rounding error in a multi-million dollar TV buy, and that money will go much further to a state house candidate. It could be half their budget if you did it right. So the money is there. Recently, Donald Trump's daughter-in-law took over the Republican Party, right? And they are saying, we're going to put all the money to Trump. Wonderful.
Great.
I want every penny. I think that the state Republican parties, they need to show their loyalty too. Every penny should go to Donald Trump's legal bills while we start funding these candidates at the state house level that we haven't been funding as much as we should. So there are models like the States Project, like Blue Ohio. But here's our problem going back like 15 years. We've treated our state level models as like not even the JV team, but the eighth grade team. For the Republicans, ALEC is core mission. That's like the varsity starting five.
And tell people what ALEC is, because we have discussed it on the pod before, but just in case they didn't hear that episode.
Everything I've described that they do in states isn't like one state at a time figuring it on their own. They created something years ago called the American Legislative Exchange Council. And what they do is everything I've described is highly coordinated. They get all these state house members together. They fly them all over the country to fancy conferences. They give them model legislation. If something passes in Florida, like the Don't Say Gay bill, they bring it to Ohio. So everything they're doing is coordinated. This is the heart of their attack on democracy, the Heritage Foundation too. So their state level stuff is core mission. It's separate from Trump and all that. It's just what they do every single day. Ours, now it's changing some. But the States Project has been kind of a side group doing great things, but it hasn't been centered as core mission. So my call to people like a Joe Biden or Kamala Harris or Chuck Schumer, and Jamie Harrison knows a lot of these things, is these things that have been kind of peripheral, they need to be front and center. Every single person who cares about democracy needs to know that they could start a giving circle tomorrow and adopt the state of Arizona and help us flip Arizona blue, which is only one seat shy of being blue. We should be as familiar of every opportunity to flip a state house as we are with every opportunity to win a Senate seat. ALEC and the Republicans are very familiar with all those battles. They put a lot of money towards it. On our side, it's still sort of not at the center. And so the rest of us need to see that's not the JV team. That's the varsity, and we need to treat them accordingly. And you and I do this. I run around the country. I'm always trying to find any group of 20 people. I say, you should be giving circle. You should adopt Michigan or Arizona or some state or North Carolina, avoid a supermajority Republican. Let's go to work. So we got to lift them all up. The good news is we don't have to reinvent the wheel. These organizations are there, you know, Run for Something and others. We just have to put them more center to our strategy than they have been traditionally.
Yeah, we talk about this all the time. And you guys, if you are wondering what he's talking about with giving circles, we've done two full episodes with the States Project on the Politics Girl podcast. So you can go back and listen to either of them. Giving Circles is a program with the States Project that really just adopts a certain state legislature and then you make sure you can win it. And the thing is that your dollars go so far there. Another organization that does that, adopting these smaller state legislatures, is Swing Left. They've done a ton of research too. States Project, ton of research. Swing Left, ton of research at the state level. Organizations. This is where change really happens. And yes, we're entirely correct that we need to still win the federal level, but we have to see the battle for what it is. We have to understand that if we're going to be saving democracy, it happens not just at the federal level where it seems like the big wins happen, but it happens at the state level. And the goal here is to play in every state, in every race across the country, because having the majority will of the country is not enough. Having the best ideas is not enough. Having the better candidates is not enough. We are getting beaten at the state level. And then once we're beaten, they shut down democracy so no one can beat them again.
Exactly.
And that's what we need to stop. We need to see the battle. We need to see the battle for what it is, and then we need to play it, play to win.
Absolutely. And what's great, I'll go back to Stage Project. I was on a call. I do a lot of their Zoom calls just to cheer them on.
They're amazing.
I was in a call where a group, they adopted Pennsylvania, early 22. Pennsylvania need to flip, I think, 11 seats to win the majority. And so Michigan was only one seat short. Minnesota had a Senate, one or two seats. Pennsylvania was 11. And this group of people, actually one of the – it was a J. Smith Cameron of Succession, the actress, was actually leading this giving circle. And they voted to pick Pennsylvania. And I thought, good for them. But boy, that's a stretch. 11 seats. And they won all 11 seats in November of 22 and flipped the Pennsylvania State House. And they've held it through several special elections. That's a win for democracy, big picture.
This is the big wins. This is where it happens. People don't even realize. And I think if everyone wants their money to go a certain way, they want their money to go far enough, we have to start beating the Republicans at their own game. They've been ahead of us all the way along. They have got this. They have understood it. And I think they had to, because like you said, they didn't have the winning argument. If you don't have the best argument, you know you're going to lose. The question is, do you lose or do you change the game so your opponent can't win? And that is what they did. And so we have to go back to beating them at their own game.
I mean, it's so painful to watch Washington, right? I mean, except for the first couple of years where you have one party rule, which we had, nothing happens.
And we all sit anymore.
Right, yeah. Exactly. Like once they win the House, it shuts down, nothing happens. And we watch them and think, gosh, it's so frustrating that nothing is happening in Washington. Mike Johnson is stopping everything. They filibuster everything. Once you realize their strategy, they don't care that nothing happens in Washington because everything they want done is actually happening in states. When Trump was president for the first 2 years, they had the House, the Senate, and Trump at the White House. The only thing they did was pass tax cuts. They actually, almost their entire agenda, though, is rushing headlong at the state level. So as we watch Washington in frustration thinking nothing's happening, for the most part, they don't care because almost every, except for taxation, almost everything they have in their right-wing agenda, banning books, abortion, gun laws, you name it, they're blocking the things they don't like in Washington, so that's gridlock. But their offensive-minded agenda is going headlong through states all the time. So they're perfectly happy to have Washington be stagnant. And again, we have to see that. They block everything in Washington that could stop them. And at the state level, where until recently we haven't been able to attention, they ram it all through. And that's why sometimes we feel like we're winning because we won federal office. But when you look closely, extremism is on the march because they're doing it at the state level.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you can see that about as clear as possible when you think about voting rights, right? So if you believed, if you are Republican or if you are a right-leaning person in America and you believe that the 2020 election was stolen, you would think that the first thing you would want to do is pass massive strengthening voter protection laws at the federal level. The Democrats presented three full bills, passed them through the 117th Congress, stopped by the filibuster every time. Now they won't even look at federal voting protections. And you think, okay, what? Why? I thought you said that the election was stolen. Well, it's because we're stopping voting protections at the federal level that would stop our donors from doing what they want and stop us from doing what we want. But at the state level, we are passing voter suppression law after voter suppression law after voter suppression law, because that's actually what it works. And like you said, you know, these, you've written a book called Laboratories of Autocracy. Like, these states are laboratories of autocracy. But if we do it correctly, we could once again turn them into laboratories for democracy. And you've written this new book coming out, which is called Democracy, a User Manual for Every American. So tell me about that book.
So the first book, I'll give a warning. It's a pretty depressing book because it's about the game plan we've described.
Yeah.
So people wrote to me after I wrote the book, and I describe a lot of Ohio where I'm from, and it's sort of a case study.
Yeah, it's tough to watch.
It's like
Ohio.
The book What's the Matter with Kansas, but it's about Ohio and democracy. At the end of the book, I went through 30 steps about what we could all do to make a difference and change things. But people, after reading the book, I got two sets of emails. One was, oh my God, David, what you said about Ohio is exactly the hell we're feeling in Missouri, Tennessee, Iowa, Texas. Millions of Americans are living in these states of non-democracy and states of extremism that's accelerating downward. So that was the first feedback I got. And the second was, okay, David, we get what's happening. What more can we do about it? So the reason I wrote the second book was because there was such a demand. People want to get a lot more involved. So the second book really is a user's manual for every American. What can you do? And my hope is that although it's sobering to see that we're all in a battle for democracy, and it's sobering that it's in all 50 states, the good news about that sobering fact is everyone's on the front line. It's not only a few swing states. In Oklahoma, you're on the front line. And you know what your challenge is? That 60% of those districts in 22 were uncontested. Well, let's get that down to 30% and then 20%. That's progress in the battle for democracy. In New York State, although it seems blue, your problem was turnout was so low that Santos got elected. Let's fix that problem. So basically, I'm trying to show everybody the stakes are democracy, not just federal elections. The Republicans have seen all states as the front line. Let's all see the same thing. But that's empowering because it means we are all on the front line and there's a ton we can do about it. And so the book basically, you know, I give the link to how you create a giving circle. I talk about sister district. I talk about one thing I really am passionate about. Once you see that so much of the battle for democracy on their side is to suppress voters of color, my hope is people see that way beyond their typical political work, every nonprofit they are part of, every business, all of it, all those institutions could be playing a role to lift those voters back into democracy. Every food bank should be registering everyone who comes in the door. Every homeless shelter, every mayor of any city who's a Democrat should have every rec center, every library, all of them should be registering, engaging voters, getting them on the vote early lists if that's a state has them. And too often, none of that's happening. You know, the other side spends every moment thinking, how can they undermine democracy? We viewed it as safe and we viewed it as federal elections. So we're not scaling like they are. If we all figure out in our own footprint, in the second book, I literally have a diagram of a footprint. I tell people, fill it out. What nonprofit do you volunteer for? What are you on the board of? What mayor do you know? If we go through all of our footprints and write down everything we do and then think to ourselves, every one of those institutions could actually be playing a role in democracy. That's how we start to scale up at a level that we're competing with them. So the book is all about you're on the front lines, and man, there's a lot more we can all do than we've ever imagined versus thinking, well, the only thing we really can do is send money to a Senate candidate in a swing state hundreds of miles from us. Let's help those candidates. But that's sort of, think about a footprint. That's like your little toe of involvement. I want the whole footprint in. And that's what I walk through in the book, trying to help people figure that out.
Yeah, I love it because it's not a 30,000 foot view. It's like a directly engaging in our democracy and how to fight back. Like it's a book of concrete steps and solutions that the reader or my listeners can use wherever they live, right? The idea is for getting people to come up with their own plan about how they're right. personally going to fight for democracy. And it doesn't matter what your role is in your community or how much you know about politics or where you work or what you do, right? Everyone has a role that they can play that's more than just their big toe, right? At the end of the day, it's about rolling up our sleeves and getting down to work. And I think if we do that, we can win and we can make real change. And then people can think, oh, government really does do something. Government really can help us. Government really can make a difference because there was a period of time where government made a tremendous difference. That so many of the things we think about in America happened because government made a difference through the FDR years. Everything, your Social Security, your unemployment insurance, all these things, they came from government programs of a government that was working for and by the people. And I think we can totally get back to that again. So thank you so much for joining me today, David. I'm really fired up for this year. I have such faith in democracy. And I really have faith in the American people. And I think if we can just make enough people aware, not only of how much is at stake, but how much power they actually have to make real change, right. I think we can only go up as a nation. And that makes me really excited.
Yeah. Well, let me just say, and we have an incredible winning streak for democracy that started in August of 22 in Kansas, rolled into all those election denying Secretary of State candidates losing. We flipped state houses in November 22. We never normally flip. We beat Mastriano. We beat Lake. But then we win Wisconsin. Then we win Ohio. Then we flip Virginia. 70% of Moms of Liberty school board candidates lost. As you just said, that's because there's an army of democracy that is building. So my challenge to all of us is don't lose that momentum by going back to the old model. That model is working because people were helping in states they never normally help in races they normally don't pay attention to, in special elections in August in Ohio. And if we can keep that muscle memory building and keep that activity building, what do we do in November of 24? We get on the ballot everywhere. We take the contrast between Biden and Trump and Katie Britt, and we run it all the way through the entire ballot. We don't only take advantage of the fact that we're kind of normal mainstream pushing for good things and they're extremists. We don't only want that advantage to be clear at the presidential level. We want it clear at every state house election. And we can only do that if we run everywhere. But if we do all that and we keep building from the work we've already built, this ahistoric winning streak when we're in the White House, I think November 24 could be not just the year we beat Trump, win the House back, hold the Senate, but also flip Arizona, flip the Pennsylvania Senate, and start making progress at the state level we haven't paid attention. But that only starts if we, as you said, see the battle, engage it with energy in far more places and at far different levels than we ever have before. And by the way, it's starting to happen. One little example, North Carolina had 30 uncontested districts in November of 22. The new chairwoman, I think she's 25 years old, went out and recruited two uncontested races for this coming election. So we're seeing a lot more momentum going to this sort of run everywhere, run at all levels momentum.
Well, thank God, because poor North Carolina just got smushed by democracy, got smushed in that state.
Totally.
Thank you, David. And thank you for your passion. And thank you for joining me. And I'm so grateful that you're out here in the fight.
I feel the same way. This was really fun to get together finally.
Yay. I know, it really was.
Yeah.
So that was David Pepper reminding us in this important election year that we can't just go back to the old model of focusing on swing states at the federal level or thinking we're just competing on the issues. We need to see the battle for what it is. We need to accept that democracy itself is on the line, and one of the best places to protect it is at the state level. The Republicans have understood this for years. They obstruct the federal government while taking over state governments, and then they undermine democracy to solidify minority rule. They know most of us don't like their ideas, and they don't care. They just need to win enough states that it no longer matters, and that's something we simply can't allow. I want to thank David for joining us today, and you for caring enough about democracy to be here. Now go pre-order Saving Democracy, a user's manual for every American, and find out what you can do to help. Until next week, PGN. The Politics Girl podcast is written and performed by me, Lee McGowan, in partnership with the Midas Media Network, and produced and edited by Happy Warrior Entertainment. All rights reserved.